Welcome to Local Matters. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt, talking about all things education. And so today we are here with Lance Key from Putnam County School System. Welcome.
Thanks for having me today.
Appreciate you coming out. So let's start. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I grew up in a little town called Carthage, Tennessee, and went to school there, K-12. Really didn't like school, and so I decided to become an educator because I wanted to fix it. Went on to Middle Tennessee after that and have, worked at education now for almost 20 years, and I've seen a lot of changes, a lot of shifts in education. But I'm really excited about where we're going.
Yeah, good. Appreciate that. So my favorite icebreaker for everybody here is tell me about your favorite teacher.
My favorite teacher.
Growing up, somewhere along the way.
So growing up in Smith County, I had a lot of great teachers, and everybody knew everybody. But I ran across this teacher in fifth grade, Miss Lane, and she was my favorite because she was the hardest on me. She didn't let me have any excuses, and if it wouldn't have been for her, I probably would not have been successful. Probably would not have went on to college, probably would have been like all my other friends, worked in the hay fields, tobacco fields the rest of my life, or in a factory. But she pushed me, and then I had another one in high school, Miss Kemp. She also pushed me too. And I had those points in my life to where I'd start slacking a little bit, and they'd get me back in line. So they were my favorites, though.
And that's a perk with a small town like that. You know, even if you think you've gotten out of that class and you know that teacher is watching you and keeping an eye on pushing you along, you run into them at the grocery store or out at a football game, and they're checking on you.
Yeah. What are you doing now? You know, are you acting the way you're supposed to be doing? Are you going to school? Are you following up on these things? Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I'll get right on it, you know.
Yes. Always fun. Okay, so Putnam County School System. So with education in general, how long have you been in education?
About 20 years now. So I was a career student. My dad called me in college, went from mechanical engineering to computer science and then back to education. Because I always wanted to be a teacher, so taught math for about 15 years until I rode into the Vital School and the Vital program, and have been working with the Vital program, gosh, I guess about 10 years now, so longer than I remember, yes.
Okay. Well, that's a good segue. So Vital is it's been around for a while. I know it's had a lot of different versions. It's had some changes, you know, and obviously with COVID, it became very popular. What is Vital for those people that don't know?
Yeah, so Vital stands for Virtual Instruction to Accentuate Learning. It is our virtual school and our virtual program here in Putnam County. So the program started about because the state of Tennessee started a statewide virtual school in about 2010. In 2012, that kind of folded, but we saw the importance of it here in Putnam County. So we continued on the program, got the name Vital, Virtual Instruction to Accentuate Learning, and we started out as a program. Now the program, we wanted to be able to provide any student an online class that they wanted to take at their high school. The Board of Education got together and decided that all students would take personal finance as a virtual class. And the reason for that is they felt like no matter what they decided to do, whether it's, to go to a factory or work at Buffalo Wild Wings or go to, community college or going to a four-year university, you're going to have some type of online component that you're going to have to do when you go for that job application or where you go to that university. So they felt like that it was important for the students to get that opportunity. So we went from there. Later on, about 2016-17, dual enrollment really started coming about. It had been there, but not as big as we had seen it. And dual enrollment started following under, the Vital program because at the time when it started, most kids took those classes online if they wanted to take them. Later on, COVID came about, and then everybody kind of shifted to virtual. And we wanted to be able to provide that virtual opportunity for students, so a full-blown school then at that point. So we have classes for students full-blown 6th grade through 12th if they want to be a virtual student. And then we also provide a homeschool now for students who want to do homeschooling. That also runs through Vital. And then all EPSO, so early post-secondary opportunities, flows through the Vital program now.
We love our acronyms in education. The EPSOs are a very big deal and tied to budgets.
Yes.
Now, so that's a big piece of today's system. So with Vital, so if let's say I've just moved to Tennessee and I've heard a little bit about online learning, I've got a sixth grader, and in Putnam County SO, we have this Vital program. I'm interested in doing some kind of partial online or virtual school, or I'm thinking about homeschooling, possibly partially, you know, and so I don't know where to go as a parent. So what is a virtual school for a sixth grader? What does that look like?
Yeah, so we have live Zoom sessions that students are on every day. They're not on there for the whole day, but they'll be on there an hour or two each day with their teacher. The teacher will give them activities that they work on, and then they'll go work on those. But now we actually have our Vital program, the program side of this, in all of our middle schools and our high schools. So the state has decided now that every student in middle school has to have computer science in middle school for 9 weeks, and they also have to have a full credit of computer science at the high school level. So what we decided to do in Putnam County, we already had the model for the Vital program. Computer science is really an online class anyway, because they're writing programs and things like that, and the content was already online. So what we decided to do was we put a lab facilitator at every middle school, and then we put additional lab facilitators at our high schools that want to participate in the program starting this year. And we are providing now computer science to every sixth grader and to the high schoolers. So every high schooler will have to have it before they graduate now, this year's incoming freshmen. So we've actually grown our opportunities now into the middle schools.
So computer science and coding, obviously hot topic, and something that I think is going to continue to spread and become even more integrated all the way down into the kindergarten level. I mean, so how does a kindergarten learn to code, for example? What does that look like conceptually? Obviously, they're not doing that online, but you know, kindergartners, elementary school kids will get to that coding, so that when they make it to middle school and start looking at that grade level and entering in that class, how do you build that foundation for coding and computer science?
So really, to me, it's about a thought process. And, you know, we're all thinking computer when we're thinking of computer program, but one of our, you know, tasks that we do in the classrooms, and I could see doing this at the kindergarten level, is you've got a loaf of bread sitting there, you got peanut butter, you got jelly, and we'll use a butter knife, we'll say, or a plastic knife, and we'll say, all right, you've got to give me the steps to make this peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And you'll be surprised that as you go through it, the students will struggle at first, because they'll be like, all right, get a piece of bread. Well, what if the bread's not open? I'm now trying to reach through the plastic to get the bread. Or if they get the piece of bread, they're like, okay, now put the peanut butter on the bread. Well, you've got to tell me there's, you know, the plastic knife sitting there I've got to pick up. I've got to take the jar, the tops off the jars. All those pieces and processes, it's really a thought process. But when you're talking about, you know, writing a program or a computer program, you've got to have all those pieces in place. And all of those steps, those details matter. So it's really, to me, a thought process that you've got to start teaching at that young age. And, you know, hopefully by the time a kid's in kindergarten, first, second grade, they can make a peanut butter jelly sandwich. So it's, okay, let's now put pen to paper and write through that process of how do you do that?
Yeah, and taking those steps, and there's a lot of fancy terms, but it's really just taking those steps and learning those things in order, and then applying it to computer programming, computer coding, to build, you know, because if you back down, look at a website or look at a game, something that's super involved and has had thousands of hours of programming and millions of lines of code, it all starts with a very simple process that really you teach that thinking to a student, and then they can take that and apply it into that area.
Yeah, so one of the things that really helped me as I started into computer programming, when I was working some at the Google office, they really talked big about storyboarding. And I'm like, what is storyboarding? And they're like, it's what all directors do when they start writing plays or you know, they start doing their scripts and things like that. So storyboard your pictures out. Other people will know it maybe as a flow chart or something like that. Make a flow chart of what's going to happen, you know, and then if you got decision points in it, you can say, all right, if this happens, then we're going to do this. If this happens, then we're going to do that. We do this in everyday life all the time, but when you draw a picture and you can visually see what's going to happen, it makes things a lot easier to code, because then you're like, all right, I need to connect these pieces, and now how do I connect those pieces?
Yeah, and it makes sense when you see it, and for students, you know, breaking it down to those simple tasks and simple pieces, it makes sense to them. And with technology being so intuitive, it's fairly easy for them to pick that up. So then let's pull back around to high school. So we talked sixth grade and what that looks like with a virtual school. What are some of the options at the high school level that are popular? And so we see people who are doing virtual school completely at home, and then we see a mixture of students at the high school, for example, that are going to a lab and working on things. What does that look like in a typical day for a high schooler?
Yeah, so really it just provides opportunities for the students to kind of build their own pathway. Now, we're lucky in our district. You know, we've got Upperman High School has many AP classes. Cookeville High School has the IB and the AP classes. Monterey, they don't have as many options. So one thing that helps us with that is being able to provide options to Monterey for online opportunities, or to Cookeville or Upperman for opportunities that maybe doesn't fit in their schedule. Okay, so we've got another company we work with called Nicewanger, the Nicewanger Foundation. They actually provide AP classes for students in Tennessee for free. That's an online class, so students go to our labs and they do the online component there, and they will actually pay for the test too for the students. So they can take a AP class for free and get it paid for that way. But then there's other things like if a student wants to take a Spanish class or a French class, and it just won't fit in their schedule, we can make it happen. We can offer it to them online using our Putnam County teachers. And then you get into other situations of students maybe want to take a Mandarin Chinese class or something outside the box. We've got access to large portfolios of classes through some of our vendors we work with. Now, that would be a paid-for class, but we could offer that to that student. So really, as long as students are willing to do the work, as long as they're on track for graduation, and they've met all the prerequisites, we can offer them, you know, many classes for them to be able to take.
Okay, so basically endless opportunities. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little more with Lance Key about technology in the school. Welcome back to Local Matters, sitting here chatting about education technology topics with Lance Key from Putnam County School System. We were just talking about the VITAL program and all the endless opportunities that students have. A lot different than when you and I were in high school. We had a French teacher and Spanish teacher, and that was our choice. We didn't really have those choices.
Well, in Smith County, we didn't even have a Spanish teacher when I was there. We were all forced into French, and I loved my French teacher. She taught me a lot of great French, but Spanish probably would have been helpful for me. So I wish I'd have had that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. So with the VITAL options, so we have it's technology. It's just a form of technology, and really technology is a tool that we use in the school system. Some people worry about technology. They think there could be problems. You know, it maybe is too invasive these days in the school system, and they just want a teacher standing there talking. What do you say to a parent who's afraid of a technology that they haven't seen before that's coming in?
So, you know, I would challenge them to think about all the technologies they've already got. You know, if you've got Alexas already, or if you've got, you know, things you can control from your phone, things like that, what do you already see that you don't even realize is a technology that you've got? And then, you know, I would also ask them, what technologies do you think that your children are using? One thing that I love about what we're able to offer for our students is, you know, kind of a move at their own pace, move on when they're ready, kind of opportunity. Because students are so, you know, tied to a teacher right now that's leading a class, leading 35 students, that they're having to meet all of their needs. Well, when you're in a virtual class, you're really getting your needs met one-on-one. So I think that technology can really enhance the classroom. You know, people always ask me, well, is technology going to replace teachers? No, but teachers that are engaged with the tools that can enhance the classroom with these tools will replace teachers. I feel like they cannot in the future. So I feel like that technology can make a good teacher better. But I don't think technology itself is going to do anything.
Let's take that Spanish class, for example, and think about ways, you know, you have all that interaction, but you've got 30 kids in the class. And so you've got 30 students on in 30 different places. Coming from a rural county, I struggled with Spanish. It was something that I really had to spend a lot of time with, and others picked it up quickly. And you can see that. So how would that unfold in a classroom, let's say with Chromebooks? You all have a lot of Chromebooks in the school system. So let's say the teacher introduces that lesson, spends the first half hour interacting, talking through, but then from that point on, every student's on a different level. So how do we engage the students, and how do you make that learning more meaningful with the technology?
Yeah, so the first thing that comes to mind for me is you've got YouTube that's there. Anything that I want to learn how to do, I can go to YouTube and I can learn from YouTube. If I want to, you know, take a beginning Spanish class, there's enough video on YouTube that I can go and do that. But then there's applications like Duolingo, which is an application that we can put on a Chromebook or you can put on your phone, and you can sit and you can practice. You speak into your phone and it will correct you. It actually gives you scores on, you know, how you're doing and things like that. So those tools can personalize the learning for the students and help them where they're at if the teachers are using those tools appropriately.
Mm-hmm. And we see those, I feel like we see those examples in every subject area, that there are ways to challenge students who have already mastered the subject, but then there are lots of opportunities for students who are struggling to get that support. Even things, Khan Academy has been around forever, but such a rich resource, a technology that is useful and that students can go to when they have a hard time. And it's no different than finding a tutor and having sitting next to that tutor and working through those problems. But there are good technology solutions for that.
Yeah, and being a math guy, hearing Saul Khan's story, he started, you know, Khan Academy because his cousin, I think it was cousin or niece, she was struggling with mathematics. And he's like, I'll just make you videos, and I'll just start sending you these videos. And then he started uploading them to YouTube, and he just started getting, you know, thousands and thousands of hits. And he's like, well, maybe I've got something here. So originally his first platform that he built was just videos. And then, you know, a lot of math teachers started using it, and they're like, we'd like to have a little practice with this. So then he started having some people code some things that was math practice that went along with it and then track, you know, how students were doing and then giving them redirection when they weren't doing well, you know, saying, hey, you might want to go back, you might want to watch this. So, you know, a really great opportunity that he provided there for students.
Mm-hmm. I know that you also, with the technology tools, you and I have spent a lot of time at technology conferences, traveled abroad and traveled to all kinds of different states and conferences. What are you seeing now at the technology conferences that you just want to grab and bring back and integrate into the school system? Because that's what I always found. I would see something and it was a great tool and we weren't using it yet. And I thought, man, this will just change the way that we teach third graders if we have this tool in our school system.
Yeah. So believe it or not, I kind of feel like that it's making the cycle back to pedagogy now. You know, we've got all of these different tools that are out there now. And, you know, you could go through and list your Khan Academies and your CK-12s and all these other tools that we have access to, but how do you use them? You know, if I just said, here's my Khan Academy lessons, I put them on Google Classroom for you, go watch these videos, go do this practice, that's not going to reach my kids. My kids are not going to grow that way. So it's really about how do we target our instruction to those students that need individualized lessons for, you know, this subgroup and that subgroup so that we're hitting all students. You know, one of the things that I thought about the other day was Dr. Terry Weeks was a professor of mine, Golden Apple Award winner, and he taught us the jigsaw method. And I loved the jigsaw method. And I remember how we would break kids out. You'd have your experts, they'd come back and they would teach. But they would have to, you know, read a document, or I would have to go around and work with each one, and they would come back together. Now, kind of doing that with, like, YouTube videos. So we got a Chromebook sitting over here that's got one video on it, another one over here that's got another one, and they all break out, and they go watch these videos, and they come back together. And then, you know, they're the experts on it, and they lead the teaching for that. So it's really pedagogy that's bringing it all together. It's kind of funny. You was talking about YouTube a second ago. I've got a YouTube channel, and I've got all kinds of different videos of from different medias and all kinds of things like that. My first year at Cookeville High School, which would have been around 2011, the TI Inspires came out, and I made a video over how to use the TI Inspire, and it's terrible. The sound quality is awful. They're snapping. There's popping going on in the background, and I just made it so that I could put it on, at that time, an iPad, so I could do a jigsaw method lesson with my students, and they could watch it. And I've got the most views on that video. It's in the hundreds of thousands, I think. And I'm like, if I knew that video was going to be watched that much, I would have made it a little bit better quality. But, you know, that's what people are looking for, I feel like, out there. Just something that can help individual students. So to come back to your question of what am I seeing at the conferences, I'm seeing a lot of great tools. A lot of, you know, AI stuff and a lot of, you know, things that can help us in the classroom. But we've got to bring it back to, and I didn't think I would be this person, but we've got to bring it back to the pedagogy of how are we using that to enhance the learning of all students.
I appreciate that. And that's brings it back down to foundational skills in the way that we're teaching our teachers. You mentioned AI. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back, and I want to ask you a few more questions about AI. Welcome back to Local Matters. I'm Jeremy Winch, your host for the day, here with Lance Key from Putnam County School System. We were talking about integrations of technology into the classroom and some of the things we're seeing today and rapidly changing, but certainly one of the largest, hottest topics of the day is AI. So tell us a little bit about how you got involved with AI. We'll back it up a little bit because AI has been around. You know, people think when you hear AI, you think ChatGPT and you think it just bust onto the scene. But it goes back to, I mean, it goes way back. You know, AI is really something that's been incorporated into things for a long time, whether you realized it or not. So where did you pick up with AI? How far back do you recall specifically using?
Oh, wow, that's a hard question. I mean, Facebook's been using it forever. I mean, one of the funny stories I remember, one of my buddies that I worked with at Google, his wife had been searching for maternity stuff online but had not told him yet that she was pregnant. And he started getting ads on his Facebook. And he went to her and said, "Honey, is there something you need to tell me?" She's like, "What?" I said, "I'm getting all these maternity clothes and all this." And she said, "Yes, I'm pregnant." So that makes me think of, you know, how long has Facebook really been keeping up with and using AI tools to figure out, you know, who I am and what I'm doing, you know. So it's kind of crazy. But, you know, as a mathematician, it's really just statistics running in the background. It's large language models and, you know, all of us, or most of us out here probably are not big statistics fans, but it's really just doing linear regression lines and making guesses at things.
But they're informed guesses.
They are
they're
informed educated. Guesses, yes, and they get better and better as they make those guesses.
They do. And as the computing, the processing gets better, I think that's part of what has led to the recent growth, the fact that the computing is faster and the calculations are faster and you know, what's running in the background has moved so quickly that we have better instant feedback. Even going back to Microsoft Office, one of the, I think, more entertaining examples, the little paperclip.
Yep, Clippy.
Yep, bounced off to the side, and it was so simple and old school and didn't work very well, but the principle was there. I mean, you know, the concept was about the same as what we're doing today when we see AI. So how are you seeing AI in the school system? I know that you also subscribe to some systems to help and so we almost have to break it into two categories there. We got to say entry-level AI and then the more advanced AI that you're working on. So let's start with the simple stuff. How are teachers and students using it, and should everybody be scared of it?
Yeah, so in Putnam County, we do have what's called Magic School AI for all of our teachers. And we have it for students too, but students don't have access to it unless – the teacher gives it access on that exact assignment to it. But it's really helpful. I've seen a lot of teachers use it to build dynamic lessons. They've been able to build, remedial things for students who are struggling with certain topics, things like that. And then they're able to generate, just ideas that they can use in the classroom. I think it's a great tool, Magic School. It's using, Class AI? Is that what it's called? That's running in the background on that. So it's really a great tool that our teachers can use to enhance their lessons and things like that. One of the neatest things that I've seen done with it is a chatbot that's been built. So our personal finance class that we've got, there is a chatbot that is built with our personal finance class so the students can ask it questions and it will give only kind of the answers back that we want it to give back. They can run their papers through a filter and it goes to that chatbot and then the chatbot gives them suggestions of how to make that paper better. So it's not just completely open up to AI. It's really tied down to exactly what we want it to be.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the perks, I think, with AI is that it is very adaptable. And obviously, the large corporations are using it a million different ways to increase efficiency and to help understand things and help interact with customers. And so with our students, obviously, one of the big scary points that teachers have worried about is cheating and what that looks like if they give an assignment, it's fairly simple, and a student decides to go and grab the answer off AI. How do you think, and I know how we're trying to address that at Tennessee Tech, but how are you dealing with that, working with that in the school system?
Yeah, so we've got other tools that are in place. I mean, of course, you've always got your plagiarism check tools, and your plagiarism check tools now have AI detection built into those. You can look at things like that. But we've got other extensions that are running in the background. One of my favorites is called Revision History, and I can actually turn Revision History on when a kid submits a paper to me, and I can sit there and watch them type that paper stroke by stroke going through that. Or I can see how many copies and pastes that they did on that paper. I can also, I can see how long they spent on the paper. So if it's 30 seconds, they probably just copied and pasted something in, and you can watch the whole flow of the paper go through that. So if they copied and pasted something in and they just went in and made edits, you can see all of those things. So there's tools that are out there to help us recognize as teachers, did this just happen? But the main thing is just knowing your students. So as you get to know your students, if Johnny or Susie is in a ninth grade English class and they write on a ninth grade level and they submit something to you that seems like they're, a senior or in their college years, you might want to talk to them about it. Hand it back to them. Just say, hey, can you read this to me? Can you explain to me how you got this? And I think you can come to common ground real quick of whether they're using AI just to cheat or not.
Mm-hmm. And it's become so pervasive in everyday life that I think we'll kind of get to a point where it's hard to turn it off. It's hard to once you start and you're using it for day-to-day tasks, helping write emails or helping, create a recipe. I mean, it's amazing how you can just pick five things out of the refrigerator and it gives you all the directions. And so there are all these daily interactions of ways to use it. And I think part of what we're seeing at Tennessee Tech, we're trying to figure out how to use the tool and help students learn how to use the tool and continue to think critically, but to just use it as a piece when it's appropriate. And to challenge them to only use it when it's appropriate, and to have better assignments. That's been a big discussion is that if the assignment is good enough that the student has to personalize the answers, has to think through, has to use critical thinking, then hopefully there'll be less plagiarism, less cheating.
Right. Yeah. And one method that I've seen work well is the stoplight method. So red light, yellow light, green light. If a teacher says, hey, this is a green light assignment, that means use OpenAI as much as you want, whatever you need to. Yellow light would mean you can use it, but use it with caution. I want your own thoughts, your own ideas here. And then a red light assignment would mean no AI use at all. So, kind of setting that parameters. Hey, we're going to use it some in here, but there's times that I need to see your own authentic work and no AI. Sometimes, hey, if you want to use it because – I don't know about you, but I use Grammarly every day. And Grammarly is an AI tool. It goes through. It helps me to fix my grammar mistakes because I'm a math guy. That would be like a yellow light. And then green light is, you know, hey, let's shoot for the sky here. Let's look at all of our options. And you can use AI as much as you want to do this assignment.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that so you and I have been around the technology ed tech world a long time, come full circle with some things. And so obviously back in the day, having a mobile device was a big deal. And for a while, I really thought that it was going to be the solution, you know, so students weren't going to have laptops in the classroom. Everybody's got these powerful devices and we're going to integrate them. And there were some integrations. There are times when students take them out and use them for a calculator, but we've come full circle. And now we're putting them in the pocket when we come into the classroom because they become a distraction. And so I wonder, and this is a crystal ball question. Do you think that AI will get to that point where it's going to become so integrated and pervasive that we need students to just step away from it for a minute and do the assignment?
So the issue that I see with that is a equity issue. When we're in the closed walls of a school, we can do that. But then when you step outside the school, you know, it's really hard to determine what our students going to use, you know. And like for me, I pay for a couple of AI services because there's some that really like make my life a lot easier. You know, some people can't pay for AI services. Okay, there's also scrubber tools out there that you can pay for. A scrubber tool is something after you get your AI, if you want it so it doesn't appear to be AI, you run it through the scrubber and then you can't tell that it's AI anymore. So it's an equity thing in my opinion. But I don't see us going backwards on AI, because it's created such an efficiency for us that we can do processes faster than we could before. So companies are not going to go away from it. So we've got to prepare students for the future. So we've got to prepare students to know how to use AI and how to use it in an appropriate way is my thought process.
Mm-hmm. And it was a little bit of a loaded question because I agree. I think it's going to be integrated in so many parts of life that if we don't teach students how to use it appropriately at some point, teach them how to interact with it, teach them how to build things with it and become more efficient when they jump into that role in their workplace and they need calculations and AI is there and can double check their calculations for whatever project they're working on in the real world, it seems silly to remove it,
right?
You know, and to not teach about it. And so I think we'll get there. We'll find that balance like we do in the school system with everything else. So well, we're out of time. I appreciate you coming today. And again, this is Jeremy Wendt with Local Matters, spending a little time with Lance Key from the Putnam County School System. So I appreciate you coming by.
All right. Thanks for having me.